All right.
Okay.
Mad Sensitive. We're back at it, Sammy.
Episode 2. Here we go.
Some say we would have never made it. They just don't have faith that we got nothing better to do on a Thursday night.
I think it's Wednesday, actually.
On a Wednesday night. We got nothing better to do on a Wednesday night than to come here and lay down some heat.
Some tape.
Thank you to our wonderful fans out there who are so devoted to what we do. You guys make it possible. You know, without you, we wouldn't be here.
I was excited because I noticed that someone commented on one of our YouTube videos and I found out it was Army's cousin.
Yeah, it was my cousin Christine. Thank you so much. Keep that up. Yeah. We're counting on you.
But we're not doing this for anyone, really.
Nobody watches this.
No one watches it.
So what are we doing here, Sammy?
Well, we started this podcast because we've been best friends for so long. So this is an experiment in us finding a space to continue the conversation that we've been having since we were 9. And I have a question. You and I both have ADD. We were both diagnosed when we were young. And we were actually kind of like part of the first generation of kids who were put on medication really young.
Yeah, we launched Concerta.
We were like 11, 12, 13. I don't forget exactly. 11, 12, 13. Put on like a pretty considerably high dose of amphetamine.
Yeah.
Given this diagnosis, and you go to some doctor and they say, yep, you got the thing. Not going to tell us anything about it. Just take this pill and you'll be better.
Yeah, it's chemical. Don't worry about it.
It's chemical. It's magic. It's this magic little potion. Don't even think about it.
Yeah. I want you to take us back for a sec. All right. The year is 2002. You're 10 years old and you've just learned that you have this thing.
Okay.
Called attention deficit disorder.
Uh-huh.
And they don't tell you exactly what that means. They just tell you something seriously wrong with this boy. Prayer just is not working on him.
Jesus still walks fidgety with him. As fuck. Well, I remember I started going to this like learning facility on Joralemon Street in Brooklyn. Go like once or twice.
See the guy who does canned heat?
Jamiroquai.
Right.
So I start going to this specialist, I guess, and I'm like, oh, we're going to some new person. There's a new person in my life. That's exciting. I'm doing all these tests.
What were the tests?
Spatial awareness, I guess. How soon is this ball going to...
Look out!
I mean, I was probably playing with blocks and like Legos and stuff, but I just remembered like there was no grade. It was just like, why are we doing this?
You're like, do you want to play?
You want to play? I'm having all the fun here. And they're just taking notes on me like a fucking gorilla. And so I don't know if it was them that told me or I'm sure they told me that like I have ADD, which is this thing that's going around.
Just dropped.
Started taking it when I was 12 or 13. And I stayed on it till I was like 25. When you have ADD, you don't think there's anything wrong with you. And not that there is anything wrong with you necessarily, but there is something happening with you that people medicate. So it's hard to say that there's not something wrong with you. I was kind of embarrassed by it. I was like, oh, fuck, I'm like hyper. I guess this is a problem. I have to learn how to like not fidget so much. But I started taking the medication. I started getting really fucking good at school. So it's like it worked. It worked for me. What was your diagnosis like?
I underwent the same type of testing as you did.
This boy's got ADDDDD.
He's got so many deficits.
So many deficits.
His deficits have deficits. Yeah. It was like a bunch of like memory tests and sort of like analytical tests. I'm not really sure. Like, what are you asking an 8-year old?
Can you tell me what the fuck I'm doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
Can I go play with
maybe
my friends?
If you told me why, I would care enough to remember. You know what I'm saying?
But yeah.
So when I was younger, I got prescribed, and I feel like, you know, steadily as I was getting bigger, like physically, I was, you know, the boy put on some weight. Let's say between 11 years old and 14 years old, I was pretty thick.
You weren't that thick.
I was rotund.
A little pudge.
Maybe a little pudge.
The Concerta had the opposite effect on you.
Yeah, seriously. Normally, you know,
you lose weight from it.
Yeah. I couldn't stop eating. I was getting bigger, and I was getting more medicated, and It absolutely helped me in school. I continued with the medication through my early like career, like working in LA and the agencies and that type of thing. My ADD now I see as sort of like it's a way deeper emotional conversation than just like, oh, this dude doesn't like focusing on what he's supposed to be focusing on. Mm-hmm. No, it's like there's some sort of thing that there's some sort of tension that my inner, you know, psyche is pushing up against that I'm trying to uncover. I'm trying to figure out what it is.
Yeah. One of the side effects that it has is that it numbs your body sensations. Mm. So it's part of why, like, sometimes you don't feel hungry. People lose their appetite when they're on Adderall. You become less attuned to what's happening in your body. And what's part of why it helps you focus, because you're less distracted, mm-hmm. right? So if you happen to stop taking the medication at some point, suddenly you become way more attuned to your body. The body sensations and the feelings that you were numb to for so long start talking to you a little bit. And it's like overwhelming, because I'm like not used to dealing with them and realizing that this is just like part of what being a human is like having fucking feelings. Talking about feelings, how in touch with your feelings are you, would you say?
It's such a tough question. I would like to say pretty attuned to my feelings, but I think that there's a lot of distraction in our day-to-day lives that allow us to stay pretty surface level with ourselves.
It's never been easier to avoid how you feel. I was recently in Costa Rica. My iPhone like got waterlogged in this rainstorm. I had like basically 3 days without my phone, and I didn't have the usual vice. I kind of just had to be like, all right, I'm nervous right now. What's that? Oh, I feel bored. Ugh, that's a terrible feel. I don't really like this. Without the easy flame retardant, these sparks of like feeling are let to burn, and they just eventually they like kind of burn out. You know what I mean? And then it's like a forest fire. It's just like eventually it's just like the feeling got to be felt. It got to say what it had to say. And then now it's like, all right, oh, I know what that is. But I think the problem is we don't let our bodies feel enough. It's like, let this boredom just finish, because it turns into ideas. It you know, let the sadness finish, because it becomes processed.
It's like you're answering the questions that arose for you as a kid now.
How do you mean?
You know, you could be scared to be alone when you're a kid. For me, when I was younger, I was nervous, you know, whenever I was, you know, because I was an only child. I still am. But you're my brother. For real. But when I was younger, you know, I'd fear being alone. Now I'm alone quite often, and I still feel like I have my distractions and my escapes. But if I put all of that to the side and I just sit in silence by myself, those old feelings start to emerge. Mm. Now I find a lot of comfort being by myself, which is really nice. But just allowing your mature older self to answer the questions and the fears that you had as a child. Do you remember when you were moving and you wrote everything you owned into an Excel sheet?
I was going through something at that time, I think.
What was going on?
I was going through a breakup, and I was going through a job shift, and just everything in my life was changing, and I just felt like I had no control over my life. I had the thought, what if I only owned 100 things? What if I just, including like clothing articles and like wires, what if I just had 100 things? I think I could just have 100 things. And it turned out I needed more than 100 things. But then I just started counting everything I own. Everything I own. I literally created it. I still have it. It was like an inventory. Every single thing I had, every piece of clothing, and I tagged it clothing, wires, electronics, bedding, letters, personal items, soap. I wrote everything down. It's psychotic that I did that. It's like some American Psycho shit. And I remember it took me 3 days to do this. I spent a whole weekend doing this. This was like my project. I'd woke up and would get coffee and do this. When there's no channel for a hyperactive mind, it will eat itself.
Yeah, you're lucky you categorized your possessions.
And not just my thoughts.
Exactly.
Yeah, and didn't just start to... this thought. This
there's my kindergarten teacher. Where does that one go?
That energy needs a place to go. And if you don't express it, you impress it. There are certain activities that are like particularly painful for people with ADD that are like to the outside eye, like so mundane. And like, I think a lot of people downplay like the emotion, the effects of certain things, because they'll think, I'm not supposed to react this big to this. This shouldn't be that big a deal. More suffering comes from the shame that we shouldn't be experiencing it than the actual thing itself. Like, we end up suffering more because we think we shouldn't be overwhelmed by this, when really it's just like, no, like, let it suck and then move on from it. Don't shame yourself for getting overwhelmed in the first place. Like, for me, like, looking through Tupperware and finding the lids that match, I want to kill myself.
That hits.
It hits.
Wow.
I got another one for you. And another thing. You're cleaning your room, or you're cleaning your apartment. You come across something. You don't know where to put it. You can't put it in the toolbox.
Right.
It's not a tool.
Right.
You can't put it in the electronics box because it's not an electronic.
And you don't want to throw it out.
What is it?
Miscellaneous item.
Yeah, it's a miscellaneous fucking item.
Yeah.
And it sucks. Why am I frustrated at this thing? It's my intellect that's trying to like create a category for everything that is fritzing out because it's encountered something that defies category. The thing about category is it's all arbitrary. Like, the categorization of things is totally arbitrary. It's part of why I feel like some people are anti-trans. It's because they can't fathom a non-binary expression of life. But like, life is non-binary. That's like the whole thing. It's so fluid. Like, everything is fluid. And so whenever anyone or any group of people comes around with any sort of challenge to our notion of category, everyone's like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But no human has any authority over the categorization of what it means to be a human being. Like, that's so fluid.
Definitely. It's like, even if you were looking at like masculinity, right, on a spectrum, right, or like gender on a spectrum, like, what does it even mean to be like hyper masculine?
Right.
What does that mean? A spectrum is not like linear.
No,
it's,
not
it's
at all.
It's like a continuum.
I think most of life, all of life, is more like that, more spectrumy and fluid.
Gay and straight feels binary.
Yeah, it's like you could be 100% gay or like 99% gay.
That's a funny concept. How gay do you think you are?
How gay do I think? That's a good question. I'm probably gayer than the average heterosexual. Everything in my experience and my preferences point in the direction of being straight. But I haven't had intimacy with a man before.
You haven't had a perception altering, earth shaking.
No, I haven't.
Identity
had that,
challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Fight Club.
There you go.
I saw Fight Club.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
Yep.
I saw it.
David Fincher knew what he was doing.
I saw it.
David Fincher knew what he was doing. He said, Oh, you guys like, you're real manly men, huh? Why don't you see Brad Pitt fucking shirtless?
Oh my God. That dude is hot in that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, his abs are great, but I'm just his face, the hair and the clothes.
Jawline.
Yeah. Just the lighting on him. I mean, is this me just wishing I could be more like him?
Well, that's Edward Norton's thing in the film, right?
Right.
Like, Brad Pitt is just what Edward Norton wishes he was.
Right. Right. And is that, I don't know.
I think that, you know, if somebody came along, if a man came along that I was drawn to.
Yeah.
There's probably reason that I'd be drawn to him for the same reason that I would wish for myself to have that
balls.
Allure. Right, exactly.
Right.
But I feel nervous about having like a gay experience because of the certain like constructs of how I identify myself, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody really fucking cares at the end of the day.
Totally, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Straight men care more than anyone.
Exactly.
The idea of a crush and like being drawn to someone, beyond the attraction that I might feel towards a woman, like the physical attraction, beyond that, usually it has to do with them having qualities that I don't have, that I want more of. You know what I mean? It has to do with wanting.
Absolutely.
Wanting to incorporate and integrate more of another's qualities as your own.
That's so nicely said. And it goes into like intimacy and relationships. The best parts of relationships are where you see yourself taking on parts of the person that you're getting to know in a way that you sort of carry that around in your day to day.
Right. It's an art, an impulse to become wholer people.
You know, if anybody's fucking watching this,
nobody's watching it.
I have a story that's like very dear to my heart that I could, may I dive into it? I was in Alaska and I was visiting my cousins who live out there and have been out there for 40 years. It's my first time out there visiting, and I was working at the Alaska State Fair, hurling potatoes with them at this baked potato shack that they run every year. Shout out Potato Palace. So I was, you know, hurling 1,000 pounds of potatoes a day, you know, 6 days a week. But then I had my weekend stacked up. So I had 2 days in the middle of the week. I was given the opportunity to drive up to Denali to see if there was a campsite that I could stay in for the night. The thing with Denali is it's only first come, first serve campsites, but you have to drive like 3 hours to get to Denali before you could even find out. I'd never camped alone, let alone alone in Alaska. I was supposed to leave that morning at 9 a.m. My car was all packed up. I was sitting at the kitchen table. It was like 8:30 in the morning. I was researching what was my route, where I was going to stay, what campsites look good, which campsites are the most likely that I can get a spot at, all of these things. And my cousin Marion comes downstairs. She's a fantastic chef, and she baked scones for the morning. She puts a scone in front of me. She's like, What are you up to? And I'm just like, I'm just doing some final research. And she's like, okay, cool. You know, this is an exciting day. She leaves, she goes and she does her thing. She comes back down. But at that point, it was like bordering on like 11 a.m. And I'm still sitting at the dining room table. And she comes down and she's just like, why are you still here? And I was just like, yeah, I just don't think I'm ready. I still think that there's more that I have to, you know, look up and I have to prepare for. She comes up to me. And she sits down, she looks at me, and she goes, you know, at a certain point, you just have to get in the car and go. And you can always come back, but you got to go. And it was at that point that I realized that, like, there's only so much preparation you can do.
There's only so much the intellect can... The intellect's never going to be the one to say go.
True.
The intellect's always going to be like, there's more we can prepare, there's more we can do.
The intellect is not going to tell you that it's time.
The intellect's not going to be like, this would be good for us to go camping in Alaska. This is a good thing.
Me? As
in the cold.
You know, I'm responsible for your well-being.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to take a flyer on this one.
I think so. I think I'm going to close my laptop and stop researching.
Yeah. Let's prepare less.
It's like an act of the heart.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a good story.
So what are we going to do? Some rapid fire questions?
Let's do some rapid fire questions, but let's get cozy first. So what do we have here?
So today we're drinking a pumpkin spice rooibos by Harney and Sons Fine Tea.
Nothing like tea and rapid fire questions.
That's what we always say. Tell me about Kundalini breathwork.
So Kundalini yoga, the idea is that the portals to the divine are actually found in worldly pleasures. And it's not just sex. So like there's a misconception that Tantra and Kundalini is all about sex. It's not that. We use our bodies as portals to the divine. Our worldly pleasures, the ones that a lot of religions say are like beneath us, are actually the golden. It's a different way than the way a lot of religions frame the body.
Right.
Sex.
Right. And but usually the body in religion is sort of like a gateway to sin.
Why should I just succumb to AI?
Okay, I'm pro AI.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I'm going to come out and say I'm pro AI.
Do you think that if AI could just take over my life and do everything for me, why not?
Yeah, no, I'm down for that.
Yeah, cool. Me too.
I'm down for that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Would you put all of your bank statements into ChatGPT and ask it to make a budget for you?
Asking for a friend?
I put all my bank statements into ChatGPT yesterday and I told it to make a budget for me and it said, you just need to make more money.
Did it actually
is what you have to do.
What did it actually say? Did it actually make a budget?
Here's the thing. I put the bank statements into ChatGPT, and I said, make a list of all of my expenses. It did that.
Whoa.
Now what? Now what?
Right.
What do you ask it to do?
Like organize into different categories.
Did that.
Okay.
So now I got all my expenses organized into a category.
How much am I spending a month on?
I know the answer now.
Okay. Okay.
What now? That's what I couldn't figure out. I couldn't get past that point. Past that level.
Yeah.
I need AI to tell me what to tell it.
Right. You should ask it, okay, I have this information. What are some questions that I could ask you?
And it says, ask away. I'm ready.
No. You say, I need the questions.
I know. And it says, I'm waiting for.
Oh, no.
You're ask in a loop. The question. Yeah.
You're in a loop.
I'm in a feedback loop with AI.
Oh, fuck. I'm surprised it didn't say, please don't upload your bank statements.
I literally asked it if I could. And it said, sure.
All of it.
I'm throwing all my shit on
social security, everything. I think it speaks to like a larger urge to powerlessness. Like we want to surrender our power to this being that can do all this for us, make the decisions, do the math, the calculus, take our banks, take it all, just make sense of it. I don't care.
Take my identity.
Take everything.
Take it. You want to be me? You want to be me so bad? ChatGPT?
Yeah.
Try it.
Try me on for a day.
Yeah.
You try to navigate this labyrinth of confusion.
Yeah, it'd be like, I need more money. I can't live like this. So I say fully lean into AI. But don't listen to AI music. I'm not with that.
Hot take. Army's not into AI music.
Miku, man, I'm still waiting to be impressed. What's your view on rescue dogs?
Get one. I don't know if it's turning 32, but my insides are starting to tingle a little bit every time I pass a dog. I just start to get that warm feeling in my stomach where I'm like, I think it might be time. My sister fosters a lot of dogs. She just adopted a dog recently, actually.
What's his name?
Frankie.
Frank?
Frank Jr., actually. It's a Friends reference.
Nice.
There's nothing better than dogs, dude. I feel like it might be time. What's your stance on a dog right now?
Hate him.
Hate him?
Yeah. Can't stand him.
Oh, God.
I can't stand him. I find them dirty. I find them not trustworthy. And
they will take your shit. They'll eat your shit. They'll take shit on your shit.
Shit on your shit.
I can see you with a dog, but you're thinking about getting a cat.
I think a cat would be so funny to have. Cats don't want to be owned by anyone. A cat will never say thank you. A dog will show you love. A cat will only show you, you know, it's very transactional with a cat.
If I was cool with a cat,
yeah,
there's nothing cooler than that.
It's so true.
There's nothing cooler than
having
a cool cat.
Yeah.
And being cool with a cat. And the cat being cool with you.
Definitely.
That's cooler than being cool with a dog.
I would agree. Listen to jazz together. You
just listen to jazz, open the window, smoke a cigarette out the window.
Absolutely.
You know cats fuck with cigarettes.
Hell yeah. Cats write poetry.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that concludes our rapid fire segment.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for bearing with us. What can people do to help themselves break down these intense life questions? Yeah.
For me, the best practice is journaling. I find it has just been an extension of my thinking at this point. I try to use the journal as a space to truly just be as honest as I possibly can. I will go in just into how I'm feeling in a moment. And then usually I'll pull that thread and how I'm feeling in a moment. Usually just a lot more stuff comes out. And it's a great way in. And for me, it's a conversation with myself. There's also an amazing therapy modality called IFS that I've like been really big into in the last few years. And it's a great practice because it's something everyone can learn on their own. It's basically, we all have this complex inner network, this inner family of different parts that are different ages and have different personalities. And it's as simple as just asking these different parts, the parts that live in your stomach or your throat or your head, what they want you to know. They end up like revealing to you a lot about yourself and a lot about what you're ignoring and what about what you might not know about yourself. And you end up having conversation. It's intimacy with yourself. You end up being like, oh yeah, right. This, I know what this is. You know what I mean? And you start to understand yourself better and you start to not get so upset with yourself. The key component with IFS is that there are no bad parts. Every part has its own agenda. It might not be expressing itself in a pleasant way. It might come across as anxious or inconsolable or depressed. But at its core, it wants to, it is trying to do something, which is generally to support you or protect you in some way. I'll put some resources in the show notes.
Dude, that's so awesome. I feel like that's, you just sort of gave a little bit of a cheat code.
Maybe.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Check out IFS.
IFS, Richard Schwartz.
Not to be confused with IBS.
And I've made that mistake before.
It'll leave you breathless.
No two ways about it.
Only one way out.
Back door.
When you were talking about the different parts, the parts of yourself that you're tapping into, the one thing that I was thinking about was like the different chakras and the energy centers of your body, which are also responsible for different sort of parts of your psychological and emotional expression. There's a way of moving this energy and sort of getting to know it and creating relationships with it that only happen through taking the time to listen to it. I think another really interesting thing that's sort of emerging, which is sort of in the journaling world, the use of AI as a way of sort of like self-reflection. Yeah. I literally was sitting around yesterday and I asked ChatGPT what the purpose of life is. And ChatGPT came back to me with like this beautiful answer where it's just like, you know what? As a matter of fact, I'm going to read it. The purpose of life is a deeply personal and philosophical question, and its answer often depends on individual beliefs, values, and experiences. Broadly speaking, many people find purpose through one or more of the following: connection, building meaningful relationships with others, fostering love, compassion, and understanding. Growth, continuously learning, evolving, and becoming the best version of yourself. Contribution, making a positive impact on the world. Fulfillment, experiencing joy, pursuing passions, and finding moments of peace and happiness. Existential exploration, searching for meaning through spirituality, religion, or philosophy. Ultimately, the purpose of life might not be a singular or universal truth, but a journey of discovering and creating meaning in ways that resonate with you. What do you feel gives your life purpose?
That's an amazing reflection that it gave you.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's like really beautifully, beautiful. Like you kind of can't say it better.
Right.
My cheat code for AI has been, rather than prompting AI, you have it prompt you. Instead of asking it questions, you leverage the fact that it knows everything. It has so much more intelligence than you do. You don't know what you need or want from AI. So you want AI to help you understand what AI can do for you. So you're basically forcing it to prod you for more information. The outputs from our AI are only as good as our inputs, and we are shitty at giving inputs. So we need to ask AI to ask us more questions to give it better inputs. So it's just a flip. It's just a flip of it.
That is probably the most important AI hack I've ever heard. When it comes to spiritual, existential, philosophical questions, we're not looking for something to give us the answer.
No.
People have studied for thousands of years to understand these answers, and they've only come to the understanding that there is no answer. So it's not about me giving you the answer. You need the proper question.
All great books, all great paintings, all great films, they generally end with some sort of question. They end up questioning the audience.
I'm trying to think about what's more satisfying, a really, really good question or like a finite answer.
No answer is complete if it doesn't also have a question.
That's why all question marks have a period underneath.
And all periods have a question mark on top of it. And why in Spanish they put the question mark
upside down.
Upside down.
Spanish grammar understands that it starts and ends with a question.
They were onto something. They were really onto it.
They know.
Oh, man. Oh, well, I think that concludes another episode of Mad Sensitive.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, good stuff.
AI and mental health and masculinity.
A lot of important conversations and most importantly questions.
Time flew there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Recorded for a long time. It's like 2 a.m.
Yeah. What do you got going on right now? You doing anything?
No, I'm hanging.
Chilling?
Yeah, I'm chilling. Yeah.
You want to kick it for a little bit?
You want to chill?
Yeah, man.
Dude, let's fucking hang. I'd love to. Yes, man. Let's
Incredible.
Chill.
Incredible.
Let's kick it. Hell yeah.
Well, we appreciate you guys stopping by, and We'll catch you next time.
Stay sensitive.